And here's a description of what he looked like. Thereafter, from the southern side of the sacrificial fire known as Anvaharya, came a fearful personality who looked like the destroyer of the entire creation at the end of the millennium. And then several verses. Like arrows released in the four directions, the demon's body grew day after day, tall and blackish. He appeared like a burnt hill and was as lustrous as a bright array of clouds in the evening. The hair on the demon's body and his beard and mustache were the color of melted copper. And his eyes were piercing like the midday sun. He appeared unconquerable, as if holding the three worlds on the points of his blazing trident. How'd you like to meet this guy down the alley? Dancing and shouting with a loud voice, he made the entire surface of the earth tremble, as if from an earthquake. As he yawned, again and again, he seemed to be trying to swallow the whole sky with his mouth, which was as deep as a cave. He seemed to be licking up all the stars in the sky with his tongue and eating the entire universe with his long, sharp teeth. Distribute a book to this guy? No. Seeing this gigantic demon, everyone in great fear ran here and there in all directions. And then this verse, text 18. That very fearful demon, who was actually the son of Tushta, covered all the planetary systems by dint of austerity. Therefore, he was named Vritra, or one who covers everything. And the one sentence purport reads, in the Vedas it is said, sa imalokan avranot tat atad vritrasya vritratvam. Or, because the demon was covered by all the planetary systems, his name was Vritra Asura. And I'm going to continue. Text 19. The demigods headed by Indra charged the demon with their soldiers, striking him with their transcendental bows and arrows and other weapons, but Vritrasura swallowed all their weapons. Yummy. Text 20. Struck with wonder and disappointed upon seeing the strength of the demon, the demigods lost their own strength. Therefore, they all met together to try to please the Supersoul, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana, by worshipping him, the demigod said, text 21. The three worlds are created by the five elements, namely ether, air, fire, water, and earth. I'm used to the other way around. Which are controlled by various demigods, beginning from Lord Brahma. Being very much afraid that the time factor will end our existence, we offer presentations unto time by performing our work as time dictates. Interesting. The time factor himself, however, is afraid of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Very interesting also. Therefore, let us now worship that Supreme Lord who alone can give us full protection. Purport. When one is afraid of being killed, one must take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is worshipped by all the demigods, beginning from Brahma, although they are in charge of the various elements of this material world. The words, Vibheti Yasnat, in text 21, indicate that all the demons, regardless of how great and powerful, fear the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The demigods, being afraid of death, took shelter of the Lord and offered him these prayers, although the time factor is fearful to everyone. Fear personified, that's the time factor, is afraid of the Supreme Lord, who is therefore known as Abhaya, comma, fearless. Taking shelter of the Supreme Lord brings actual fearlessness, and therefore the demigod decided to take shelter of the Lord. So a few things. What is, again, making reference to the theme of yesterday's class, the prescribed duties for mankind, and the message of Srimad Bhagavatam being paradharma. So we know from the first verse of Bhagavatam, Savai Pung Sang Paro, or not first verse, second chapter, Savai Pung Sang Paro Dharmo Yato Bhaktir Adhok Sajay. The Srimad Bhagavatam is teaching Paradharma. Again, going back to the beginning of this canto, how to counteract sin. And there's different divisions of methods, and the religions are made up of some of this and some of that and some of the other. That makes different religions, but the principles that religions draw from, Karmakanda, Gyanakanda, and we'll say Bhagavad Dharma. So the Bhagavatam is propounding Bhagavad Dharma. And the demigods, although they're mixed, they're not Shuddha Bhaktas, they're Bhaktas. And because of that bhakti, they're very dear to Lord Vishnu. And this is a situation where they're reaping the results of sin. There was the offending Brihaspati sin. Then there's the killing of a Brahmana sin. And Indra tried this and tried that, but, you know, it was unsuccessful. His austerities, his dividing up the rest of the reactions with others, but it's insufficient. Ritrasura was created, and so how to address the reaction of sin. It's not just, you know, get rid of the guy, Ritrasura. It's the reaction to sin, because, you know, supposing the reaction to sin isn't dismissed. So supposing by cleverness or one way or another, you know, they escape Ritrasura, the reaction to sin and the tendency to sin again, the potential of that is not uprooted except through bhakti. That's the message of the Bhagavatam. So that's one point I wanted to make. This is showing by historical example what should a devotee do, one who is cultivating bhakti, when there's reaction to sin, and specifically in the purport, when you're facing death, there's death, because he's called in this verse, Parama Daruna. Very fearful. So you, whether it's death or whatever it is that's fearful, what do you do? If you're a devotee, on the strength of whatever bhakti quantum that you have, you turn to the Supreme Lord. That's what the teaching is, because he's our shelter. The next part is explaining why he's our shelter. There's fear, and then there's fearlessness, and he's the position of fearlessness, and one who takes shelter of him can become fearless. I want to go back a little bit to, this is a little Tattva Sandarbha message. Tattva Sandarbha. BBT has published Tattva Sandarbha. It's one of the six Sandarbhas by Jiva Goswami. And Gopi Pranadana Prabhu and his team made a translation of the book and a translation of Baladeva Vidyabhusan's commentary on the book, and the BBT published it. So in the beginning section is Pramana Kanda. Kanda means section. So the Pramana Kanda is the means of knowing something is Pramana. If you want to know something, you have to turn to some means of knowing something. So Jiva Goswami analyzes the means of knowing Krishna, because the earlier part is he wants to talk about Krishna, but then he says, well, before we talk about Krishna, let us consider what's the best means of knowing Krishna before we start speaking about Krishna. We should speak about Krishna knowingly. And he goes through a whole section of how you can possibly know things. Direct sense perception, pratyaksha, reason and logic. Well, you're like, there's light coming through the window. So by reason and logic, the sun has risen. But maybe there's some other source of light besides the sun, and that's why there's light coming through the window. So, but by reason and logic, the sun has risen. And it's, you know, it's every other day at this time, it's the sun has risen. But maybe there's some other, so by reason and logic, it's fallible. So Shabda Pramana is the best. Anyway, just to fast forward, he goes through of Shabda or scripture, descending knowledge coming from the transcendental Lord, there are different varieties of that. There's the Shrutis and there's the Smritis. And without all the analysis, he says the Shrutis are best because it's easily accessible. It explains that which is difficult to understand, and it's available in its fullness because the Shrutis are not. And so he gives other logical persuasive reasons, including that the Smritis, the Puranas and Itihasas, they're as Vedic as the four Vedas, and with compelling statements from the Shrutis that say that. So then he says, okay, amongst the Puranas and Itihasas, the Smritis, what's best? And he goes through a discussion about, from Bhagavad Gita, we know that there's the modes of nature, and amongst the modes of nature, the mode of goodness is best. And he gives scriptural references in addition to Bhagavad Gita. Mode of goodness is best. And so the Puranas, amongst the Smritis, they're divided into six, six, and six. The Mahapuranas, six in the mode of goodness, six in the mode of passion, six in the mode of ignorance. The six in the mode of goodness are best. And amongst the six in the mode of goodness, Bhagavad Purana is best. And not only the Bhagavad Purana says it, the other Puranas say it. And not only the Sattvic Puranas, the other Puranas, best. Bhagavad Purana is best. And then, well, what's the Bhagavad Purana? Which one is it? So there's a very nice verse. This is to lead up to this verse. From the Matsya Purana, one of the Sattvic Puranas, that says, doo, 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 this Bhagavad Prana is best. And which one is it? It's 18,000 verses. So the Bhagavatam is 18,000 verses. It speaks of the killing of Vritrasura, exactly what we're describing. It has commentary on Gayatri Mantra, and it speaks of Hayagriva Brahma Vidya, Lord Hayagriva giving transcendental knowledge. So, in the commentary by Baladeva Vidyabhusan about this, he explains, there are some, I don't know how many, but there are some that say, that's the Devi Bhagavat. Now, we're not so familiar with Devi Bhagavat, but there are people that are familiar with Devi Bhagavat, and they're fans of their Shaktas, the worshippers of Devi. And Devi Bhagavat has 18,000 verses. And Devi Bhagavat speaks of this pastime, which means the Vritrasura pastime. The other Puranas, Padma Purana and Vishnu Purana and the other Puranas, they don't. They speak about Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, so many things that are in the Srimad Bhagavatam also. But they don't speak about Vritrasura being killed. But Devi Bhagavat does. So if you're interested in, you know, the commentary, you can go read it. Get a copy of the BBT version, please, of Tattva Sandarbha. And it goes something like this. Devi Bhagavat does not give commentary on Gayatri Mantra. The scholars of the Shakta school, they say, oh yes, it does, and they give their reference, but it doesn't. And there's Vaishnava scholars that say it doesn't because. The indication within the Bhagavatam, within the first verse, is, in the first verse, and elsewhere as well, there's indication of Gayatri Mantra being explained, including the very same words that are in Gayatri Mantra. This is the Brahma Gayatri Mantra in the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. Just some appreciation. Bhaktivinod Thakur. You all know who is Bhaktivinod Thakur. One of the 100 books that he, one of the final or last of the 100 books that he wrote was Bhagavat Arka Marichi Mala. It's a mala, means like a string or a garland of verses illuminating the subject matters of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is similar but different from the Tattva Sandarbha. Excuse me, the six Sandarbhas of Jiva Goswami. The Sandarbhas of Jiva Goswami is a particular type of commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam. It's different than this kind. He did one of those too, like verse by verse by verse, that kind. But Tattva Sandarbha is by topic. And there's six main topics and then subtopics under those six. And that's what Tattva Sandarbha is. He's explaining them. And what this Bhagavat Arka Marichi Mala by Bhaktivinoda Thakur does is, it's his, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's analysis of the topics. And there's so many. And then there's verses within the Bhagavatam that illuminate that topic. So it's a garland of verses illuminating from the Bhagavatam, illuminating the topics within the Bhagavatam. And at the end of the book, Bhaktivinoda Thakur puts a little addendum. And in the addendum, he says, I'm going to disclose something that perhaps shouldn't be disclosed. But to make it very clear to the reader, I'm going to disclose it, that Rupa Goswami came and personally instructed me to write this book. And he gave a special appreciation of the first verse of Bhagavatam and its meaning. And so that's the source of Bhagavad Arkamruchimala. And this first verse has its commentary on the Bhagavatam embedded within it. And if you're guided by such acharyas as Bhaktivinoda Thakur or Rupa Goswami guiding Bhaktivinoda Thakur, then it's illuminated. And otherwise it's not. It's another verse. But the Bhagavatam itself says, and others than the Bhagavad Purana say, the Bhagavatam is a commentary, among other things, is a commentary on Gayatri Mantra. Bhagavatam is a commentary. So Gayatri Mantra is from the Rig Veda, and it's considered amongst mantras, amongst Gayatri mantras. Brahma Gayatri is the, like, you know, Gayatri is the queen or the ruling personality of mantras. So it's special. And the Bhagavatam explains it in the first verse and then the whole thing. So there's more and more to be described. Devi Bhagwat doesn't do that. Devi Bhagwat doesn't illuminate or give commentary on Gayatri Mantra, nor does it have this Hayagriva Brahma Vidya. Hayagriva gave the knowledge of the Vedas. It's described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's not described in Devi Bhagwat. So in other words, what we're reading, so to go back to the verse, what we're reading is a section which distinguishes, among other things, it distinguishes Bhagavat Purana from all the other Puranas as being the superlative, the best, the emperor amongst kings, the best amongst all evidences. So, you know, sometimes, you know, practicing devotees, we meet people that aren't Gaudiya Vaishnavas, but they have some other teachings. Maybe even they're Vaishnavas. Like, let's say a classic one is Sri Vaishnavas accept that Narayana is the supreme. Why? Because their Pramana is Vishnu Purana and Padma Purana, primarily those two. And in those two, it speaks of Narayana as the source of all avatars. So that's their conviction. And they have their pramana to support it. And they view, for example, that Krishna is an incarnation of Narayana. And therefore, he's none different than Narayana because he's an incarnation of Krishna. And so they like coming to places where we're seeing, you know, Krishna worship. They have a little problem with Radha Krishna. They like Rukmini Krishna or Satyabhama Krishna because that's, you know, they don't have this Vraja mood. They have the Aishwarya mood. Anyway, Krishna and Narayana are the same. But between the two, as far as Sri Vaishnavas are concerned, Narayana is the source of all incarnations. You familiar with that a little bit? Okay, so some of you are. So now, what do? We don't argue with them or like get out a sword or a club and start dueling and bashing and saying, rah, rah, rah. We don't do that. But we shouldn't, similarly, we shouldn't be like bewildered. Well, wait a minute. You know, maybe if one's faith is soft and pliable, if one is in the Kanishta position, well, maybe weren't told the real deal. Maybe Krishna isn't supreme. Maybe Narayana is supreme, because there's all these people that they're really paka, they're really staunch, and Narayana is supreme. Our basis of accepting that Krishna is supreme is the statement of Srimad Bhagavatam, that Krishna is supreme. And we accept Srimad Bhagavatam amongst the Puranas to be the topmost of the Puranas, because the other Puranas are Sattvic or mode of goodness Puranas, but the Bhagavatam is Shuddha Sattva or Vishuddha Sattva. And there's a distinction between the two. It's the chief evidence. And in this chief evidence, it says Krishna is supreme, and that's, on that authority, we accept Krishna is supreme. Just, you know, as far as scriptural dialogue, we have our other reasons for accepting that Krishna is supreme, and our worship and devotion for him in the way that we do, through disciplic succession, through the mercy of Lord Chaitanya and so forth. Anyway, a little sharing about this pastime that we're reading has a special significance in distinguishing Srimad Bhagavatam from any of the other Puranas. And just a little detail in the commentary by Baladev, he explains in the killing of Vritrasura, it's done by Devi, not by Lord Indra. So that, just not to confuse you, but just it's a little appreciation, because it's directly in this verse. The verse reads, Yenavrita ime lokas tapasa twashtra murtina. Tapasa means austerity. There's no description in the Srimad Bhagavatam of that austerity. In the Devi Bhagavat, there is description. Not necessarily they're like a one-to-one correlation. But when Vritrasura appeared, according to Devi Bhagavat, Baladev explains, for 100 celestial years he underwent austerity. Here it's saying, you know, day by day he grew like arrows in the four directions. So he became very, very, very powerful. And according to Devi Bhagavat, he worshipped Lord Brahma, kind of like Hiranyakashipu did. So he worshipped Lord Brahma, and Lord Brahma came, and Vritra asked for benediction. I mean, all of this is not in the Bhagavatam. It's in Devi Bhagavat. He asked for what benediction would you like? And he said, I'd like to not be killed by this and that and the other thing, like Hiranyakashipu did. And so that was given. And then Lord Brahma went to Indra and said, Indra, I think you should call a truce. But he's really powerful. But worship Vishnu, Brahma advised. Worship Vishnu and take help from Devi. Devi will help you with this. So with Devi's help, he befriended Vritra. Vritra kind of like cooled out. And with Devi's help, he was able to kill Vritra because he had a lightning bolt weapon that was covered by foam. So he was killed by foam and not by, you know, other means that he got a benediction from Brahma that he wouldn't be killed by. One of these tricky things. But it's not, please appreciate, the narration of the pastime, it's not, the distinction here is not taking shelter of the personality of Godhead in Devi Bhagavat. In the Bhagavat Purana, it is, because this chapter is prescribed duties for mankind. Our prescribed duty is take shelter of the supreme personality of Godhead, P. period. And whatever other things you do, they're to assist that period. You know, the Sarvadharmam Parityajamami Kam Sharanam Braja doesn't mean we don't do other things. Like Baladev says, there's a whole section, long section in Devi Bhagavat about charity this and charity that, that doesn't appear in the Bhagavatam. Because the Bhagavatam's message is not elevate yourself by charity. The Bhagavatam's message is take shelter of the personality of Godhead, period. And whatever charity, you know, yat karoshi, yat asnasi, yat shahosi, didasi, that, whatever you do, it's let that be as an offering or a worship of the Supreme. It's subordinate to taking shelter of the Supreme. Whatever, anything is subordinate to that. That's the Bhagavad's message, which exactly corresponds with Bhagavad Gita's message, not coincidentally. So the final point is from the final verse that we read, this, when the demigods begin making their prayers, this is text 23. the demigods are demigods. They're controllers of the creation of Lord Brahma, or ultimately the creation of the Purusha avatars, the three Purusha avatars. Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshay Vishnu, and Shiradakshay Vishnu. They're empowered personalities that look after the universe. So they're saying, you know, there's these five elements the universe is made up of. We're receiving our power from the Supreme Lord to do that, but we are afraid of death. Because they, you know, Vritrasura represents death. Exactly what's in this verse on the board. Very fearful. Representing death. That's the fear of death. And then they say, being very much afraid that the time factor will end our existence, we offer presentations unto time by performing our work as time dictates. There are verses in the Shruti mantras, Prabhupada quotes some of them in the Bhagavad Gita purports, where out of fear of the Supreme Lord, the wind blows, out of fear, the sun shines, out of fear, you know, the demigods are, you know, they're obedient, yes sir. They have bhakti, but they also have fear. So out of fear of time, you know, the destructive feature of material existence, they're dutiful. Then they say, the time factor himself, however, is afraid of the Supreme Lord. Now what's that? Because we know in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, time I am. Which sounds like, you know, Krishna and time are identical. But elsewhere, like for example in Brahma Samhita, time is identified as a Shakti, Kala Shakti. And Kala Shakti means an energy. And there's eternal time. Here's this time topic again. There's eternal time, and eternal time is of the internal potency. It's eternal, sat. However, there's transformations when Rama Devi understands that Mahavishnu wishes for Pradhan, the reflection of Rama Devi, to have some service. She, Rama Devi, transforms her energies into the time that we know. This Kala Shakti that brings things into being, holds things into being, and when withdrawn, destroys things, everything. So it's, you know, the time as we know it. That kind of time. That kind of time is afraid of the Supreme Lord. Everything in this material world has that position. And we, as followers of Bhagavad Dharma, are being trained by this verse to go on the other side of fear, on the other side of time that destroys, on the other side of fruitive activities, on the other side of material existence, how take shelter of the Supreme Lord? That's Bhagavad Dharma. That's the prescribed duties for mankind. So they are saying, finally, therefore, let us now worship the Supreme Lord who alone can give us full protection. They can make us fearless. I mean, the immediate thing is, look at this guy, Ritrasura, yikes. And we tried, but he just swallowed our weapons. We're all going to die. Vishnu, Vishnu. So please take away the fear. But the higher principle for those who take shelter of Vishnu, the higher principle that the Bhagavatam is teaching is come to the position of transcendental time where you're not afraid of time, you're not afraid of death, you're not afraid of anything. You become fearless because of taking shelter of he who is fearless. So here's the purport and I'll end. The demigods, reading from the purport, the demigods, being afraid of death, took shelter of the Lord and offered him these prayers. Although the time factor is fearful to everyone, fear personified is afraid of the Supreme Lord. Fear personified is time. Everyone's afraid of death or how the destructive feature. Let's say, you know, hurricane or a tornado or tsunami or earthquake or, you know, something that mass destruction. Go live in the Ukraine for a while or something. I just spoke with Naranjan Maharaj. Boy, it's really on pins and needles. What's going to happen there? You know, anyway, Krishna will protect them, but the atmosphere is very dangerous. So what do? You take shelter of Krishna. Although the time factor is fearful to everyone, fear personified is afraid of the Supreme Lord, who is therefore known as Abhaya. Fearless. He is fearless, and one who takes shelter of him becomes fearless. You take shelter of Krishna, you become protected by Krishna, or Krishna-ized, or Krishna-like. So as he is fearless, you become fearless. And just the last little point, Prabhupada, the name that was given to Prabhupada at birth by his father, was Abhay. Fearless. It's a name. It's not just like a quality. Here, Prabhupada is writing, although he's not using his name, saying, that's me. He's saying, that's the Supreme Lord, Abhay. He's fearless. So when Bhaktisiddhanta initiated him, he gave him the name Abhay Charan. Charan is, you know, shelter at the feet of Abhay, which is the same. There's the Lord and one who takes shelter of the Lord. Both are fearless. And he, Srila Prabhupada, in his Bhagavatam presentation and all of his teachings, is wishing to take us to that position of shelter of the Supreme Lord, position of fearlessness. It's fearful. Prahlad Maharaj speaks of this. The material world is a very fearful place. But one can be fearless if one takes shelter of the Supreme Lord. Prahlad indicated he was not feeling fear of this wicked Hiranyakashipu. The demigods were afraid of Ritrasura. Prahlad was not afraid of Hiranyakashipu. I don't know which of the two you'd rather encounter, Hiranyakashipu or Ritrasura. Take your pick. But even something that's so outrageous, you know, we have things that make us afraid, but Prahlad is not afraid. Indra and the demigods are afraid. One becomes Prahlad-like or fearless by taking shelter of Abhaya, the one who is fearless. He is feared by fear personified. And last, in Queen Kunti's prayers, she is amazed that he, Krishna, who is feared by feared personified, is afraid of the stick in Mother Jasoda's hand. Little stick. He cries. So she throws away the stick because she doesn't want to see Krishna crying. And it's not like play or like, you know, like a drama. Oh, now I'm supposed to be afraid and he cries because Mother Jasoda will then feel maternal affection if I cry. Not that. That's easy to understand. He's just play acting. But he was afraid. He who was feared by fear personified was afraid of the little stick in Mother Jasoda. Just see the exalted nature of Mother Jasoda. How Krishna is controlled by the love of Mother Jasoda. So we're not Mother Jasoda. But we're devotees and we're carrying some bhakti in our heart, and that bhakti is attractive to the all attractive. He's attracted. So let us offer that bhakti to the Supreme Lord and we become fearless. That's the Bhagavatam teaching. Whatever the situation, you know, big, small, or in between, and you know, complex and simple or whatever it is, life is filled with all of it. Take our devotion to the personality of Godhead and offer ourselves in shelter to the personality of Godhead. Please give us shelter. That's the position of fearlessness. Hare Krishna. Any comments? Questions? Yeah.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I have two questions. The first question is, you were saying that the first verse of the Bhagavatam, it gives a commentary on the Gayatri Mantra. Should you be able to elaborate on that just a little bit?
It's too long. There are terms within Brahma Gayatri which are within the first verse. And the final phrase of the first verse, Satyam Param Dhimahi. Dhimahi is like, that's a flag, or you know, like a flashing light. Dhimahi is particularly appropriate for Gayatri. There are other words that speak of meditation, like in the Ashtanga Yoga system. The last three, dhyana, dharana, and samadhi, it's meditation. And there are other terms that indicate meditation. Dhimahi is specific to Gayatri. So it's a hint. Satyam param dhimahi. Gayatri, some people think Gayatri is this and that and the other thing. It's satyam param dhimahi. And other terms within Gayatri, mantra, are within, embedded within the first verse. And then, you know, so there's commentary on the first verse that illuminate, not necessarily, you know, this means that and that means the other thing. It's illuminating. It's in simple language. Gayatri mantra commentary is Gayatri Mantra, Brahma Gayatri Mantra is not meditation on the sun. It's not meditation on the Brahman. It's not meditation on anything else but the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the Bhagavatam is description of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in full. That's a short version. Read the first verse and read Prabhupada's purport of the first verse. And, you know, Tejo Varimridam Yata Vinimiyo Yatra Trisargo Mrsha. So there's description in Gayatri of the features of creation. Bhur Loka, Bhuvar Loka, Swarga Loka. Places that are made of elements. and even those that are in the heavenly planets, according to the first verse, they're bewildered by the arrangement of those elements. But there's an unbewildered state where one can then fix one's mind on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For example, as part of the commentary of the first verse on Gayatri Mantra. And it's the whole Bhagavatam. The first verse is like a key that is then expanded and expanded and expanded in the other 17,999 verses. It's a key. It's like a sutra-like key. Right? What else?
There was a traveling Russian brahmachari who passed through Chicago. Maybe about a few months ago, he told us a story about how this one devotee in Eastern Europe, his little girl was kidnapped by some people. And instead of calling the cops, he sat in front of his Narsingha Didi and just chanted japa for like 5 hours. And somehow she came back to the house. And he told us that when he tells this story in universities, when he tells this story in universities.
In a university.
Like in universities, programs. Like this brahmachari, when he travels around and does university programs.
You speak very clearly the beginning of the sentence.
And speed up.
At the end of the sentence, you speak real fast and I can't just get it.
When this brahmachari travels and does university programs.
Does university programs.
Yes.
Okay.
And he tells this story about the girl getting kidnapped.
Okay.
And the father not calling the cops.
Okay.
He often gets challenged.
He gets challenged.
Even criticized.
Criticized.
Very irresponsible. He should have called the cops.
Why? You should have gone to the police.
Yeah. And I was also thinking, very strange. He should have called the cops. I thought that when I first heard the story. I thought, this is strange. How come he didn't call the cops?
He could do both.
So this is where my faith is at.
Huh?
So that's an indication of where my faith is at. You know,
no, it's not. It's not just where your faith is at. It's what you should do. Prabhupada didn't instruct us like that. The Lord Chaitanya didn't instruct like that. You know, the position of government is to give protection. And when one requires protection, one goes to the enforcement of protection. It's their service. It's their duty. They're not only have the authorization from the state, but if they're to whatever degree they have capacity given by God, that's their duty. So one can do both. It's not just, you know, that's not a statement of, well, that's weak faith.
So then the question comes that in our life, like you were advising us to take our devotion to Krishna in times of trouble.
Sure.
We have many situations.
But to take your devotion to Krishna doesn't mean close your eyes. Do I need to say more? There's a structure in which we live, and that structure is provided by Krishna. It's from Krishna. So we thinking of Krishna, we may utilize this or that or the other thing. I mean, let's take another example. You're crossing the street, and you didn't see, but a car is coming wheeling down the street, and well, I guess I should just pray to Krishna and take shelter of Krishna. We do practical things. We should not just panic out of fear and scream and, you know, we should take shelter of Krishna and get out of the way of the car that's screeching around the corner. For example. Yes. S- Stand by, Prahlad. You can do some more of the same.
When you are in a fearful state of mind, and as a practicing devotee, your attention does go to taking shelter of Krishna. But the reason behind that is because the situation is very disturbing and you want to be relieved of the disturbance. Is that okay to have?
Sure. But first, pause. Next, take shelter of Krishna. And then contemplate what's the best way to address with this, to address the situation.
So in addressing the situation, one of the fear is that what you say won't be accepted at the face value. So still be confident that Krishna knows.
Yeah. Yeah. And it doesn't mean, you know, your business stops there. You may go on doing 10 other things, or you may not. Or two other things. But in any case, you know, ultimately the shelter of Krishna is there. So.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Anything else? Yes?
This term taking shelter, we hear very often, and I'm just trying to explore more deeply the real meaning. What does that really
mean? The real meaning.
Because it seems like an overarching.
I'm sorry I didn't give you the real meaning. Sorry.
How did
it's a secret. I can't tell you. It's
deeply understand. It seems kind of like a sutra. Taking.
Well, you know, let's think of scripture. What does scripture say about taking shelter? There are six limbs of surrender. So it's each one of those. Those are symptoms or angas of surrender. But the essence of those angas is bhakti. It's, Krishna is my shelter. And I go to that place for Krishna's shelter. And then there are symptoms of that, and I may exercise this symptom or that symptom or the other symptom. Cultivate, especially where ones are not so strong. Cultivate. But the basis of the cultivation is bhakti, not just, you know, like physical therapy or something. Right? Just exercise this muscle and build this muscle, you know, doership. It's bhakti is the operative principle. And that's what shelter is, shelter taking. On the strength of knowing that it's Krishna who's the protector of his devotee, it's not my effort. I can't protect myself. I may do some things, but it's that Krishna is empowering those things. And if Krishna doesn't empower those things, so be it. Not like, you know, he cheated me or something. There's protection even in those situations where it appears, oh, Krishna didn't come to the rescue. You know, that's an appearance only. Krishna is always there, especially for his devotee. And that's Krishna, that's one of the most glorious features of our master. He will never neglect his devotee. Never. The way in which he extends himself to his devotee may not be the way the devotee was expecting Krishna to extend himself. They wanted, you know, remove this obstacle. Hurry. It may not be like that. But Krishna's protection is there nonetheless. Nonetheless. Always. It's just his nature. And one who has bhakti will understand that. Even in the most trying of circumstances. Here's a little sharing from Sri Brahma Samhita on this topic. It's from text 55. It's describing, in text 54, Brahma is speaking of how the Govinda gives to the fruitive workers exactly according to their disposition. They get, you know, he reciprocates. It's he who gives through the agency of his energies, but he who gives. And then there's the devotee who can go beyond that tendency of fruitive work. And Krishna shows this very special quality of being partial to his devotee, although he's impartial. It's because of the devotion. He reciprocates with the devotion. And then he, in the purport of that verse, it's delicate, it's subtle, but he Bhaktisiddhanta says that personality of Godhead may draw the living entity who has devotion but is mixed from the mixed position to the unmixed position. There may be some ordeal because he's attached to the temporary, but there's devotion. So Krishna takes him from the attached to the temporary to the position of exclusive devotion through ordeal. And in one of Jiva Goswami's six sandarbhas, there's Priti Sandarbha, where Priti, is she here? Priti means affection, love. So in Priti Sandarbha, he, Jiva Goswami, outlines stages of prema. And one of the stages of prema, he quotes, it's raga. It's, you know, from Mahabhava is topmost, and here is prema, so it's like ordinary prema, and then higher and higher and higher stages of prema, up to Radharani, Mahabhava. And one of them is raga. And the prayer of Queen Kunti, where she, you know, one of the famous parts of Kunti's prayers, is she prays for difficulty. Like, who does that? Kunti does, because the reasoning is, when there's difficulty, there's intense dependence upon Krishna, and Krishna comes. So what's the use? Krishna's now leaving Hastinapur to go back to Dwarka because there's no difficulty. He came because there's difficulty, and he removed the difficulty. Bring on the difficulties! More and more and more, because Krishna's there. Jiva Goswami says, this is an example. It's not like, you know, we can't, it's foolish to imitate such a thing, and we wouldn't anyways. But it's a stage of raga, a stage of a higher stage than, you know, the introductory stages of prema. It's a matured stage of prema, where more important than anything is Krishna's association. And if it's difficult for Krishna's association, no problem. That's shelter. It's a mature stage of shelter. Just some sharing. And from our positions, we can't imitate Kunti, but we can understand when difficulty does come, it fits in with the verse. Here comes difficulty. And Bhagavad Dharma teaches, take shelter of Abhaya, the Supreme Lord, who is fearlessness. He's feared by fear personified. So we take shelter of him. And now your question. What's the real meaning of taking shelter? Let go of the other stuff and just take shelter. And their symptoms. And even difficulty, it's no difficulty. It's ecstasy. I think I'm going to end. You have a question? Okay, let's do this, and then we'll end.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. I want to know a little bit more about the eternal time.
About the what?
Eternal time.
Which of time?
The eternal time.
Action. Eternal time. You want to know more about eternal time? Let's go.
It's the nature. We discussed it yesterday, didn't we? Somewhere along the way here. In the spiritual world, Vaikuntha, Goloka, the absence of time as we know it exists because their time is eternal. At the same time, while time is eternal, by the action of the internal potency, the Yogamaya potency, there's a sense of passage of time. It's Yogamaya, because time is eternal. But Yogamaya all she does is facilitate Krishna's pastimes. And Krishna's pastimes are for Krishna's enjoyment. It's a place where Krishna enjoys. And he enjoys eternally. But there's variety in that realm of enjoyment. And so it appears that there's passage of time. Because how do you have events without passage of time? Can you think of events that occur without passage of time? Certainly in our realm, no. There's time. But now how do events take place in the spiritual world where time as we know it is absent? Time is eternal. But it's Yogamaya acting to give the sense of passage of time. Let's take two examples. Brahma Vimohan Leela. You know that one? Brahma stole the calves and the cowherd boys. And he came back. And he saw the calves and the cowherd boys. So he went back to the cave and there was the calves and the cowherd boys. So he went back to the scene of the crime and there was not just calves and cowherd boys, but forms of Narayan and all that spectacle that he saw. And then all of that disappeared. It was just Krishna looking at him with unblinking eyes, smiling. So while that took place, that moment of Brahma's time, 1 year passed. This is time. 1 year passed on earth. Right? And Krishna took the position of each of the cowherd boys and each of the calves so that the cows could have Krishna as their calf and the mothers could have Krishna as their son and fulfill their parental affection, vatsalya rasa. And then that year passed in Boma time. And then the cowherd boys are having lunch with Krishna. From their perspective, just a moment had passed. And they said to Krishna, oh, you're so attached, you can't be without us. Sit down and have your lunch. It's Yogamaya. For pastime. Purpose. For some, it's 1 year. For them, it was a moment. Time is very flexible. It's just Yogamaya. Stretching and collapsing for pastime purpose. Here's another example. Your question is describe a little bit about eternal time. It's just the internal potency and Yogamaya moving the appearance of time to be like this and that and the other thing. So, rasa dance. For the gopis, their separation from Krishna feels like 12 years or more, but it's actually yugayitam nimeshena. And what's a nimesha? It's a fraction of a second. And a yuga is thousands and thousands of years, probably just 12 years or more for just a fraction. That's when there's separation. But when there's meeting, for the whole night they did rasa dance. For the gopis, it felt like just a few moments. and it's over. But according to Bhagavatam, it was the night of Brahma. It was a long rasa dance. Because the light of Brahma is a long time. So it's just, time is very flexible. It's something like, you know, the deities have a backdrop. And it's just a backdrop. It's actually eternal time. But it appears like this and sometimes appears like that and very flexible. To assist Krishna's pastimes, that's all. That's eternal time. Kind of mind-blowing, isn't it? It's not time as we know it, that's for sure. And even time as we know it, it's still relative. But then, you know, eternal time is very flexible. Just to assist Krishna's pastimes. You ready? Let's go. Goloka Vrindavan. The train's pulling out. Get on board. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.